Today, I'm speaking with Ada Leo, board member at ZTTK Sunshine Foundation, mom of Lucky Lucky, and founder of Lucky.org. Ada is joining us from Boston to share her perspective on what a cure really means in rare diseases and how families, researchers, and advocates come together to make real progress. Ada, thank you very much for joining us here on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. So let's start with all the hats that you wear. So Ada, as Lucky's mom and also a leader in the ZTTK community, when you hear the word cure, what does it mean to you and to families like yours?
Yeah, cure means to me hope and improvement in quality of life, the various ZTTK syndrome. But you know, when I first heard the word cure and started using it in my Lucky campaign, shortly after Lucky was diagnosed, honestly, I didn't think much about it. All I did was talking to other patient advocacy group leaders, learning what they did successfully with their fundraising campaigns and research journeys, you know, talking to scientists, and also, you know, reading a lot of articles published on, you know, successful parents who have found treatments and cures for their children. So to me, you know, coming from a business background, a marketing background, I simply thought that, hey, the word cure is short, is punchy, hashtag cure ZTTK. It works for other patient advocacy groups. I'm going to use it for the Lucky campaign. So cure, you know, at a start, yeah, of course, definitely represented hope and improvement in ZTTK symptoms, but it also was a way to get industry attention, get donor attention. And then as I continue this journey, you know, talking to our community, talking to other families, you know, I learned that cure means different things to different people, different families, patients, individuals. Sometimes it could mean just having more words, being able to express, I love you. To some, it could mean, you know, improving seizures. It could be maybe being more independent. You know, that's one we hear repeatedly, having their children be independent, especially when the parents are no longer here. So, you know, to me, there is no one definition for cure, in my opinion. It's defined by the family, the patient, the caregivers, and it means different things for different people, but you know, to me, it means hope for improvement in quality of life and addressing the symptoms.
And that is a very important point. Similarly, I actually try the experiment of asking different people about what cure means, because you know, similarly, when we got our son diagnosed, cure to me meant, for example, medicine. Mm. Right, but it was really interesting how throughout the journey and asking other parents as well about what it means. Now I've changed my mind and completely agree with you. It can be hope, dignity, quality of life, but this is also a very so the to all to kind of bring all these points together. One needs to almost deep into researching into science, like yourself, my background is management, so not much about researching. So what would you say to parents who don't have this kind of scientific background but still need support to understand research and advocate for their child? What would be your message now that you are in a position where you understand both sides of the rare diseases?
Yeah. Like, I think like many, many families, you know, initially, you know, I was a little bit intimidated by the word research, right? Not having that PhD, the MD, the science background. But I quickly learned that patients and patients' families, caregivers, are the experts. They hold a lot of knowledge that can help drive research. And I would like to borrow something that I just heard from a podcast, Once Upon a Gene, where Effie talked to Dr. Wendy Chung, who's a researcher physician at Boston Children, a leading powerhouse in the rare disease space. She said, parents are Dr. Mom and Dr. Dad. And I wholeheartedly agree, right? We have the lived experiences of being with the patients, our children, 24/7. So we have so much knowledge and data points, whether it's stories or concrete data, right? If you're like me, I keep an Excel spreadsheet to track Lucky's symptoms. So we have all the data that researchers need. So in a way, I think we lend so much power and expertise to research. So, for families who want to participate in research or drive research, simply sharing stories and data, participating in the data collection effort organized by the foundation or other organizations, are the foundation of research, I would say.
And that's very important because some people might feel blocked thinking that I can only help when I become an expert. But what your advice is actually parents, when they get diagnosed, they can actually make an impact from day one. They don't need to wait until they get the expertise, right? They already have it. That's very important.
Exactly. Honestly, like you and I know more about ZTTK than doctors and biotech companies and a lot of other people who have, PhDs and MDs. No offense to them, but our condition is so rare that oftentimes parents are the experts from day one.
Indeed. And speaking of impact, Ada, what have you learned about leadership through Lucky's journey? That things that surprised you, that you were not really expecting to learn, but that you have learned after going through that journey?
I have learned so much. And I got an MBA as part of my study, and I feel like all my learnings are kind of coming together in the way I, step into to lead the foundation. I would say a few things I've learned so far. One is, being vocal, using your voice. Honestly, for me, I was never like the loudest person in the room. I don't remember, being like an activist or, doing anything that's like very public. I'm more of a private person. But because our condition is so rare, I found myself needing to, use my voice. Use all my public speaking skills that I learned in school, how to be a great storyteller, right? A lot of soft skills, but mostly using my voice to be loud, to raise awareness, whether it's with industry leaders, with our community, with policymakers. This is where I really can't be shy and hold back because many of our kids don't speak, so I have to be Luki's voice. We have to be the voices of our children to raise awareness. So that's number one, using the voice, using my voice. Secondly, I've learned to be vulnerable. I think we often hear from leadership, management principles. Being vulnerable has pros and cons, right? It's a right balance. But in this case, I've learned that being open about your emotions, because we're dealing with medical complexity, and sometimes there are tears. Like I teared
Yeah,
up at the
a lot of
conference.
them.
I teared up at the conference. I think that's the most public, tears I've shed ever. But just being vulnerable is the second learning I've had is, it's okay to be vulnerable. Especially we are going on this very complex journey where there's so many ups and downs. And lastly, I would say, being okay with uncertainty and ambiguity. I think a leader, needs to just embrace that there's a lot we don't know, right? And by only admitting what we don't know and seeking advice and help from others, right? Leader, to me, a good leader is someone who turns to others who know how to leverage resources and your network around you. So for me, it's like, okay, I don't know this. I'm not a scientist. I need to turn to our scientific advisor or clinician or fellow parent for advice, right? I think that's something I've learned to do as well, is just admitting, hey, I don't know the answer to this, so I need help. I need to ask.
That is very important. And just going back to the first two points that you've mentioned, I cannot emphasize loudly enough how important it is for us to become the voice of our kids, but also the voice for our organizations. I just had a conversation with someone, a parent of a rare disease child, and he told me that, it is great being talking to you, because when I talk to my family and friends, everyone says, "Oh, it's going to be all right, don't worry." When I talk to other people that are not so much involved in the topic, they tell me, "Oh, that's terrible." But when I talk to you, you actually understand that it's neither terrible nor, every day full of happiness. It's our reality. There's good points, good moments, bad moments, as everyone else has. And only when we become kind of this voice, you cannot only kind of offload a little bit of the weight, but you can also help others, because we are also saying that we are here and we can listen to you, we can talk to you as well. And this brings kind of the community together between people that actually understand each other. So that is very, very important, and it's something that I would like to also leave the message to everyone that is listening to us, is, don't be shy and be loud, as you're saying. Be the loudest person of the room. Become the voice of our communities.
And in different ways too, right? Some people can be loud through writing, posting on
Absolutely.
LinkedIn, social media. Not everyone has to, go on a stage and, and talk,
Exactly.
right? It's like, and you can be loud through paintings and, kind of, I think we all have our way to be loud, and it doesn't mean your voice, right? It can be
Ah, absolutely.
in different ways.
Absolutely. And as a segue question, so on one hand, you are kind of this leader. On the other hand, you are also a mom. How do you balance your emotions when making tough decisions? Because there are some tough decisions to be made, right?
No, definitely. I think it's mostly around how to balance urgency and thoughtfulness. And I say this because I think as parent, you, at least I feel, so much urgency,
Oh
to
yes.
help Luki, right? Like every dollar raised, every decision seems to be so important. To help my son, Luki, who's only 3. But then at the same time, I've also learned to be thoughtful, right? Not every parent has a child who's 3 years old, right? Not every parent has had the time to, talk to other patient advocacy leaders and read up on the research. And, I think we all have different priorities, and, all of our kids have different severities as well. CDK is a very wide spectrum. So Luki's needs do not always equal the community's needs. A lot of overlapping. So, what I've learned to do is, again, going back to how families of the patient, of the children, the sunshines, are really the experts, right? So far, our foundation has done surveys, We've conducted a survey to understand, hey, what are your priorities for treatment? What are the top symptoms that you want to address? And the top symptoms, speech, cognition, actually align with how I feel about Mookie's priorities as well. It is again a wide spectrum, and even though Mookie's specific CDTK mutation makes up like 25% is the most prevalent mutation variant of the community, you can see there's still a wide spectrum. Some put seizures higher up, some put GI and growth higher up on their list. So I think it is really by listening to the community through quantitative, conducting a survey, or qualitative. In the conference we had just in Boston the last summer, we did focus groups with 30 families in Boston, and that was really, really meaningful because I was also able to learn from other families with children across ages from 2 to actually 44, from different geographies, right? From the US to Australia and in between. So I think those are really important to help me personally balance urgency and also being thoughtful about I have my pace, but I also want to make sure I'm bringing others along and taking the time to just understand the other experts in the room.
You should not leave anyone behind, right? But and also the Boston conference was amazing, and to see also to see that spectrum of ages, geographies, and see how many points we actually have in common and how much we can learn from each other by looking to older children and also kind of sharing our knowledge from when our kids were younger with our other families. That exchange to me was so important during that Boston conference visit. I absolutely loved it. And congratulations to the TTK Sunshine Foundation for the amazing organization. Lots of effort that was put in there, I'm pretty sure of.
No, it was so magical. I mean, nothing beats in-person connections, especially for our community. So thanks to everyone who travel, to the conference and dialing in virtually.
And Ada, you also mentioned the focus groups. Let me pick up on that one. How should patient voices guide scientists and researchers, and for example, those focus groups, not just towards treatments, but also towards improvement of quality of life?
A way, they are so closely intertwined, treatments and improvement of quality of life. And in fact, one of the biggest areas we're looking to understand through the patient data and patient voices is what does a treatment mean in terms of improving the quality of life, right? Is a treatment to help with speech? Is it to help with cognition? There's so many aspects to what is the drug, right? Even when you think about a drug, what does it do? Where is it targeting? And so it is with these patient voices, whether it's in the focus group qualitatively or the data we collect through our patient registry and retrospective natural history study, Rarex and Citizen platforms, that we can really figure out, okay, these are the clinical symptoms that we observe in the children, right? In the sunshines, delay speech or not speaking, intellectual disability, et cetera, GI issues, right? And then mapping the clinical symptoms to what we hear from the families, the caregivers, right? What matters to you? For example, Even though a lot of our kids have mobility issues, Luke, he's three, he's not standing or walking yet. He's working really hard. But interestingly, mobility is not high up on the top symptoms that families want to address because there are other ways to manage that. And same for seizures is even though 50% of our population, according to scientific literature, have seizures, is not top five of the symptoms that families want to address. Families know best because they're already, perhaps managed by medication or devices, things like that. So it's really when the clinical data come together with the qualitative, the patient, the family unmet needs that we can, really inform the scientists, researchers, and clinicians, hey, what really matters the most to the our sunshines? So yeah.
In being in Boston, you are in kind of this unique environment of
Yeah.
hospitals, biotech, and advocacy. I'm actually quite curious about how that shapes the collaboration. So, from your experience, what lessons or any examples could we in Europe draw from the learnings in Boston that would kind of highlight this collaboration between the different parties in the ecosystem?
Yeah, that is a good question. I don't know if I'm going to do it justice because I'm still learning about the US system and also how Europe works. But from what I know today, I think there are a few things you need to enable the collaboration between families, patient families, researchers, industry, and patient advocates. Well, first you need the funding, the money. I know it always comes back to the money, right? Research is not free. So it's really when you have funding, whether it's provided by the government like the NIH or private funding. For example, our foundation is very fortunate to be a grantee of the Chan Zuckerberg Foundation, where we were awarded 800,000 last year's to fund capacity building and data collection and other projects. It's really when you have the funding that you can do things like family researcher conference, bring together the different voices in the room. It's only when you have funding from, the NIH or other private foundations or other sources that you can, help pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies, what's called de-risk, the development of the drug because it can be very expensive.
Indeed.
And why would, a for-profit biotech company focus on your population of only, less than 1,000 patients, right? You have to de-risk, and so it takes money to embark on that journey. So I would say number one would be having funding sources available, public, private sources available, to enable these stakeholders to come together. And I would say secondly, having the institutions here in Boston, we have the Broad Institute, we have Boston Children, we have Harvard Medical School. So we have all these prestigious institutions working on accelerating research. And I'm sure Europe has its own ecosystem too, but I think you really need institution where you can attract talent and also have the access to patients to bring folks together.
And collaboration is king
It is,
here.
yeah.
So we are getting to the end of our conversation. It's a brilliant conversation. Thank you very much for all the insights that you've been sharing, Ada. Maybe one last question. If you had one message for leaders in rare diseases, what would you want them to remember about the disease TTK and also the meaning of cure from a patient advocate point of view?
I would say one word. Well, maybe it's two words for us.
Yeah.
Patient families. Patient families are, the critical foundation of, the rare disease space. Patients and their families have such great power, and expertise in, accelerating research by sharing their voices, their data with industry leaders, with researchers, with policymakers. Sometimes when you think about all these players, you would naturally think, the industry, the policy, the government, the biotech, they're the experts. But no, I think in this space, there's a lot of information asymmetry, where the patients and the families themselves are the ones who hold a lot of the knowledge. And again, coming from like a business background, right? You always think about the customer, right? As who are you designing the product for? Who are you selling to? So I think it's a lesson that the healthcare, the pharma, biotech, policy players can learn from is, the customers are the patients and the families. Ultimately, we are here to improve their lives. So we need to listen to them. And then I want the families and the patients to know that, they have so much power in their lived experiences. If only we're loud in our own ways to raise awareness and tell all these other people what we know about our conditions.
No, that is so powerful. It's not just about science, right? It's also about people, and behind each family, behind each rare disease situation, there is a story. There is a person. There is a family that should be listened about their concerns. Ada, thank you so much for sharing your voice and your experience to us today. I think you remind us that a cure is not just medicine or a drug. It's also dignity, hope, and better lives for our families. So thank you very much. To our listeners, whether you're a parent, an advocate, a researcher, there's so much we can do together. And one of the things I take from this conversation as well is that collaboration is a must. And when we center patients and families in everything we do, then we can really go beyond all the expectations. So thank you very much, Ada, for sharing this with us. And this is also September, the awareness month for
Yeah.
ZTTK. So I kind of recommend everyone to go look at the ZTTK Sunshine Foundation website and donate for the research of cure, whatever cure means. Thank you so much, Ada.
Thank you, Andre, for all you do from Portugal.
Connecting continents here.
Yeah, love it. All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.